Just as in the days of Noah before the flood, the world today is filled with violence. And that violence on the part of world governments and individuals is on the increase. All of us are affected by it, some more directly than others. But not all of us may realize how much it affects our own immediate future. Jehovah has said that as he meted out just punishment on the world of Noah's day, so will he execute a judgment against this present evil world. How we are all personally involved and what we can do about it is the theme of this drama. It is set in modern times, and the situations reflect what is happening and may yet happen in this violent, unloving age. All the incidents portrayed are based on real experiences. Only a brief introduction and conclusion are set in the days of ancient Israel. These two brief scenes are included to highlight, by illustration, the urgency of the matter. They are designed to portray a condition in ancient Israel that has a parallel in the world today, a condition that most people are totally unaware of. Yet that condition, which affects all mankind, carries with it a judgment of death. There is only one way to survive that judgment. Follow closely the drama theme, Marked for Survival.
Ben-Haman, what happened? What's J-Dad doing on the ground?
I don't know, Kenan.
Look, his head. It's bleeding. What did you do to him?
Nothing. I was splitting this log and heard a moan and turned around, and there he was, lying on the ground.
Is he hurt badly, Kenan?
He's dead.
Oh.
Did you see what happened, Mahalath?
Yes. I was working over in the next field, and I saw J-Dad walk up behind Ben-Haman. Ben-Haman was leaning over to adjust the log he was splitting, but just then he straightened up and swung the axe back to take another stroke, and the axe hit J-Dad right on the head. Ben-Haman didn't even see him till he fell down.
Then it was an accident.
Yes, but Gomar isn't going to think about that. When he sees what happened, he won't even wait for an explanation.
Run, Ben-Haman. You've got to get to the City of Refuge right away.
But it was an accident. I didn't mean to kill him.
Of course not, but Gomar won't stop to ask questions.
Please.
You know how he loves his brother.
Run!
Oh, but so do I. He knows that.
All he'll know is you killed his brother.
Here, leave the axe. Run!
You don't have a minute. It's your life.
But it was an accident.
Don't stop.
And don't look back.
Run!
I'm afraid Gomar may be along any minute.
We've got to try to hold him back a while if he does come.
I just hope Ben-Haman didn't linger too long.
He doesn't have much of a head start.
He's coming. Here comes Gomar.
Does he have his sword?
He always carries it.
Where's J-Dad? I'd like for him... What's this?
Who... It's J-Dad.
He's dead. Who killed him, Kenan?
Now, Gomar.
Who killed him?
It was an accident. No one would hurt J-Dad.
We all loved him. You know that.
Don't you understand? He's my brother. Somebody! Where's Ben-Haman?
He was here too, wasn't he? It was Ben-Haman, wasn't
it? Please, Gomar, it was an accident.
He's gone to the City of Refuge.
Have mercy, please. It was an accident.
a merciful provision in ancient Israel, the cities of refuge. Jehovah's justice demanded a life for a life. But if a life was taken accidentally, then justice could be satisfied with mercy, and the unwitting manslayer's life could be spared. Not that he would go free entirely. A life had been taken, and life is sacred to Jehovah. But he could flee to a place of refuge, and after proving his lack of malice, he could and must remain in the city under the services of the high priest until the high priest died. This was a just and merciful retribution. But how and why is that significant today? It is because, either directly or by community responsibility, all people have come into blood guilt in the eyes of Jehovah. Most people are totally unaware of this, but that does not change or alter their blood guilt. This means they are subject to death at the hands of Jehovah's Avenger of Blood, mankind's next of kin, the Lord Jesus Christ. Only by becoming aware of their blood guilty condition and taking the necessary steps can they find refuge in Jehovah and have their lives spared. This is the point we want to demonstrate in the modern-day scene that follows.
Jeff Martin is here, Mr. Horton.
All right, Miss Jones. Send him in. Sit down, Jeff. What can I do for you?
There's something I think I should report to you, Mr. Horton. A lot of valuable materials are being taken out of the plant without authorization.
Stolen?
Exactly. As you know, as supervisor of materials handling, I have some contact with inventory controls. I've checked carefully, and I'm convinced far more goods are coming in than I see orders for going out. Yet our inventories are fairly constant. And last night, I was here a little late, and I saw several of the men loading up one of the panel trucks, and then they drove off. This morning, I checked carefully, and I can find no authorization for a truck going out after working hours. It sure doesn't look like petty pilfering.
It isn't, Jeff. At least a dozen or so employees are involved.
Then you know about it?
Yes. I became suspicious about 2 months ago, so I hired a couple of undercover men, and we've investigated thoroughly every employee in the plant. We know now who the guilty ones are, and every one of them is being discharged tonight. I appreciate your coming in and talking to me about it, Jeff. You're one of Jehovah's Witnesses, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
There are three others in the plant, too.
That's right.
You four are the only ones in the plant that are completely above suspicion.
Thank you, Mr. Horton.
There's one other person, though, that I'd like to know more about. It's Roger Redgrave. I understand you know him quite well. But he isn't one of Jehovah's Witnesses, is he?
No, but he studied with me for several months and seems quite sincere.
Do you trust him?
I have no reason not to. I'm quite sure he isn't involved in the stealing.
No, he's been cleared. I'd like to ask him some questions, though, and I'd like for you to stay here while I talk to him.
If you want me to.
Miss Jones, send Roger Redgrave in, please.
Yes, Mr. Horton.
Come in, Roger. Sit down, please.
Thank you.
Let me speak plainly to you, Roger. We've known for some time that a ring of thieves has been operating in the plant. We've made a thorough investigation, and we've found no evidence whatsoever that would implicate you.
I'm glad of that.
But, Roger, are you one of Jehovah's Witnesses? We could find no evidence that you are.
No, I'm not. I'm studying with Jeff, though.
Yes, we found that out.
And I believe what they teach is the truth.
But you've never joined.
I've not been baptized as a witness, no. But...
What I'm getting at is this. Among those whom we've caught are five key men in this company. They have to be replaced, and I'm looking for men I can trust. I know I can depend on Jehovah's Witnesses. I would like to be as sure of you.
What can I say? I was not involved in the stealing, and I wouldn't be.
Jeff says he trusts you. I'm willing to take his word on it. Jeff, I'd like you to take over the job of plant supervisor. And Roger, I'd like you to take over Jeff's job of supervising materials handling. The other positions I'm offering to the other three who are Jehovah's Witnesses.
We certainly appreciate your confidence, Mr. Horton. But before we can accept your offer, there are certain considerations that we must mention to you in all fairness. As Jehovah's Witnesses, there are certain responsibilities we have in our congregations that we feel must have our first priority. We have regular meetings to attend, weekend activity, conventions, and other similar duties.
I know what you're saying, Jeff. I expected it. This is something else I've learned about you people. I can't say I understand it altogether, but I admire your dedication. It's another reason I want you men to work for me. And Jeff, I want you to see how many more of your people you can hire. I'm willing to make the concessions you request. It's worth it to me to get men I can trust. Will you take the job?
As long as we understand each other, yes.
And you, Roger?
I'll go along with Jeff.
Then it's agreed. I'd like to see all five of you in my office the first thing tomorrow morning, and we'll discuss our new organizational setup and go over your individual duties and responsibilities.
Thank you, Mr. Horton. We'll be here.
Well, I didn't expect anything like that.
Neither did I.
One thing I don't understand, though. Why did Douglas Horton question my honesty so when he admitted they had no evidence of my involvement in the stealing?
I don't think he was questioning your honesty as much as he just wanted to be sure. If you were one of Jehovah's Witnesses, then I'm sure he would have accepted you without hesitation. But as it is...
Oh, come on, Jeff. Can I be an honest man without being one of Jehovah's Witnesses?
Of course you can. But the point is, when someone is baptized as one of Jehovah's Witnesses, he obligates himself to be honest and dependable. That's because he's accountable to Jehovah God and must keep his laws. We know, of course, he can lose his standing with God if he violates this obligation. But one who lives up to God's name can be trusted. So the point is, if you had been baptized as one of Jehovah's Witnesses, I'm sure Horton would feel justified in trusting you and vouching for your integrity just as he did for us.
I see. I didn't go along with those fellows that were stealing, but apparently Horton wasn't sure what I might do another time. On the other hand, he had no question about you, because you're one of Jehovah's Witnesses. Is that it?
That's right, Roger. You've been studying with me for several months, but something seems to be holding you back. Is it because you don't feel the need to become identified as one of Jehovah's Witnesses?
Well, you know my problem. Marcia's so wrapped up in her church, she'll never take an interest in the truth.
You've never really talked to her, have you?
No, but it's no use. Do you think she'd ever give up her choir directing and organ playing?
You know, of course, Connie's been studying with her for several months now, and she's been attending meetings, too. Even when you don't go.
Sure, I know. But I still don't think she'll get very far. Marcia just doesn't want me to know something she doesn't know. That's all.
You don't have to wait to see what Marcia does. We all must render an account for our own course. And not being definitely identifiable brings far more serious consequences than not being recognized by someone like Douglas Horton.
What do you mean?
Well, Ezekiel, the 9th chapter, tells you why. Ezekiel saw 7 men coming from the northern gate of the temple, 6 of them with weapons for execution, and the other with a secretary's writing case. Then Ezekiel heard Jehovah call out to the man with the writing equipment to go throughout Jerusalem and put a mark on the forehead of all those sighing and groaning over all the bad things that were being done in the city. Then he told the 6 men with the weapons to go through after him and strike. He said, "Let not your eye feel sorry, and do not feel any compassion." He said all should be killed, old and young, men and women, and little children. Only those who had the mark on the forehead should be passed over.
What does that mean?
Well, the man with the writing equipment really represents Jehovah's anointed. And the man's going throughout the city looking for those sighing and groaning represents the searching out of those who are feeling sick at heart over the hypocrisy and reproach on God's name that they see in Christendom's religions. But more is involved. These persons must separate themselves and their families completely from all false religion and identify themselves beyond all question as having taken that stand. They must be no part of Christendom's religion, which is pictured by ancient apostate Jerusalem, and no part of the world that Satan has set in opposition to God. They must get baptized and put on the true Christian personality.
Why did Jehovah say everyone in the city was liable for execution and would be destroyed if they didn't receive the mark?
He said the whole city was filled with blood, which would make everyone guilty of bloodshed by community responsibility. And that's another reason why we must identify ourselves today as being no part of Christendom. Her blood guilt came to the full during the two world wars of this century. Indeed, mankind as a whole is blood guilty before Jehovah because of community responsibility for all the bloodshed worldwide. Of course, it has been unintentional on the part of most of us, so Jehovah has made loving provision for us to find refuge.
Oh, I remember. The cities of refuge in ancient Israel.
Yes, that's it. We have to avail ourselves of the services of the great high priest, Jesus, and that means dedication and baptism. It's only through Jesus that we may find refuge in Jehovah with the hope of everlasting life.
I think I'm beginning to understand, Jeff. Maybe I've just been kidding myself. Unless we get that mark on the forehead and separate ourselves completely from false religion and this bloodstained world, we're still blood guilty before those executioners Ezekiel saw, in spite of all our sighing and groaning. If a man like Horton couldn't accept me without it, I'm sure those executioners won't stop to look twice. I guess I better talk to Marcia about all this and go with her to the meetings.
Douglas, did you have a good day?
Much better than I thought it would be when I left home this morning. Ah, good. Here's my newspaper. Hello, Jimmy.
Hello, Daddy.
Were you a good boy today?
Yes.
Yes, Veronica. I had a very good day.
That's good, because I have something I'd like to show you.
What did you buy this time?
Oh, it's nothing like that. This is something for Jimmy.
What is it?
Here, let me show you. Let's show the book to Daddy, Jimmy.
But I'm looking at it.
It's all right, dear. You'll get it back. We want Daddy to see it.
All right, but I want it back.
I'd like you to see this book of Bible stories I got for Jimmy.
Did you get it from your church?
No, they don't have anything like this there. I got it from an old girlfriend of mine, Marcia. You know, she's the one that plays the organ in her church and directs the choir.
Let me see it. Oh, the Watchtower. They're Jehovah's Witnesses.
Do you know them?
Only that they're good people. I have some working in my plant. If this is their book, I'd say sure. Let the boy have it.
Here's your book, Jimmy.
Thanks, Mom.
I'm glad, Douglas. He hasn't let go of it since I brought it home and showed it to him. Another thing, Marcia talked to me about some of the things in the book, and I found them very interesting, too.
That's nice.
Marcia's husband works with a man who takes him to the meetings once in a while, and Marcia said she knows this man's wife, and she's very nice. She said they've had a number of discussions about the Bible, and she's learned a lot. So I asked her if they could both come over here sometime and let me get in on it.
Oh, you're not going to meetings with them, are you?
No. I said Marcia and this woman are going to drop by here sometime for a little chat, that's all.
Well, they're very good people, but they're a very dedicated people, too. Be careful you don't get too involved. Personally, I admire them in some ways, but I can't understand them. They're so completely wrapped up in their religion. Some people say they're fanatical. Of course, Jeff is not a fanatic. He's a very reasonable man. It's almost contradictory.
It'll be all right, Douglas. We're only going to be talking about the Bible. Hello. Come on in. It's good to see you, Marcia.
We're glad we could come over, Veronica. This is my friend Connie Martin. Connie, this is Veronica Horton.
Hello, Veronica.
Hello, Connie. Your husband, Jeff, works with Douglas at the plant. Douglas speaks very highly of him. But Douglas isn't at all inclined toward religion. Oh, please, come in and sit down.
Connie's been studying the Bible with me for several months now. She can answer all your questions.
Marcia's told me a little, and one thing I've learned is that Jehovah is God's name. That meant a lot to me. Could you explain this to me, Connie? How do you view your religion that's different from the way others view theirs?
That's a good question, Veronica, and I think it gets very close to the root of the matter. To most people, religion is a practice or belief that just fits into the routine of their life to a greater or lesser degree.
That's what I've noticed. Those I know, their religion has little, if any, bearing on the course of their life.
Exactly. If it fits in conveniently, good. If not, they can readily adjust their beliefs to make them conform.
But what about the so-called fundamentalist groups?
It's true, there are many people who are strongly affected by their religion, especially the charismatic movements. But in almost every instance, their religion is designed to make their life more comfortable, to help them fit into the world, and help them make their own little contribution to a better world. In every instance, they're definitely a part of the world. Yet note what Jesus said of his true disciples at John 17, verse 16. They are no part of the world, just as I am no part of the world. Besides, none of them satisfactorily answer, and most don't even attempt to answer, questions like, what is the purpose of life? How did we get here? Why has God permitted wickedness? Does he ever intend to do anything about it?
Can you answer those questions?
The Bible can, and that's another point of difference. Do you know many people who use or even read the Bible?
Not too many.
What of their religious teachers? For most, it's become a social gospel. If someone asks them a question, they get no scriptural reply. They rely on their own ideas. Jehovah's Witnesses view the Bible altogether differently. To us, the Bible is the expression of Jehovah God's purpose towards this earth and all mankind. It was inspired by him to reveal to us what he's done in the past and what he intends to do in the future and how we can have a part in it, a part that means life and salvation.
Can you tell Veronica briefly what Jehovah intends to do?
Why don't you do that, Marcia? I really believe you can.
All right, I'll try. God's purpose is to rid this earth of all wickedness, violence, sickness, and even death. It means this system we now see around us with all its governments, false religious practices, and greedy commercial interests will have to be put out of the way to make room for a completely different kind of rule, the kingdom of God with Christ Jesus as king.
That's amazing. Is that possible?
You pray for it.
I do?
You repeat the Lord's Prayer, don't you?
Sure. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
What comes after that?
Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven.
Did you ever stop to think what that says? Do you think conditions in heaven are like they are here on earth?
Of course not.
Then if earth is to be made like heaven, what's going to happen to the earth?
It's going to have to be cleaned up. You know, as many times as I've prayed that, I never thought of it that way.
I didn't either until Connie started studying with me.
But does that mean all the governments and everything else have to go too?
It does if God's kingdom is going to rule. Let's see what Jehovah said by his prophet Daniel at Daniel chapter 2, verse 44. And in the days of those kings, he means the governments of this world, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that will never be brought to ruin, and the kingdom itself will not be passed on to any other people. It will crush and put an end to all these kingdoms, and it itself will stand to times indefinite.
That's different, all right. When do you expect this to happen?
in the near future, within our lifetime.
It's no wonder you people are so involved with your religion. But if all this you're saying is true, what's going to happen to all of us? What about someone like Douglas? He's really a good man. He's honest, hardworking, takes good care of his family, but he just isn't interested in religion. What's going to happen to someone like him?
There are many people like him, and if they're truly sighing and hope to survive, then they must be helped to understand what God's purpose is, as he foretold through his prophet Ezekiel. It's in Ezekiel chapter 9, verse 4. And Jehovah went on to say to him, "Pass through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and you must put a mark on the foreheads of the men that are sighing and groaning over all the detestable things that are being done in the midst of it."
I guess a lot of people are doing that, all right.
But what are they doing about it?
Well, I guess most are just complaining and getting disturbed about it. Some, though, are protesting and trying to remedy the situation.
But how does the Lord's Prayer say conditions will be made right?
Oh, I see. By Jehovah's kingdom. And Jehovah's going to do that. So what you're saying is, not everyone sighing and groaning will be marked for survival.
Well, not everyone who can see the badness of the world today, no. Only those who see the reproach being brought on God's name and who also realize that God's kingdom is the only hope of the world. They separate themselves completely from false religion and this corrupt world because they realize God's name is involved. The prophecy continues in verse 9. So he said to me, "The error of the house of Israel and Judah is very, very great, and the land is filled with bloodshed, and the city is full of crookedness. For they have said, 'Jehovah has left the land, and Jehovah is not seeing.'" We can only hope that someday your husband and others like him will realize that and take steps to be marked also.
I've just taken that first step myself, Connie.
That's wonderful. I know you've been thinking about it.
Yes, I see the need of separating myself from the world and coming out of false religion. And so I have resigned as choir director and organist.
Well, Marcia, knowing you, I can understand your decision. I think you're courageous.
Roger will be surprised.
You haven't told him?
No, I wanted to choose the right moment to tell him.
And you're going to be one of Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yes, that's what I hope to do. I only hope Roger will also.
What happened then, Mommy?
Well, Jimmy, the story goes on. I will not bless you until you destroy it, and the one who has taken these things. Jehovah says that he will show Joshua who the bad man is. So Joshua gathers all the people together, and Jehovah picks out the bad man, Achan. Achan says, "I have sinned. I saw a beautiful robe and the bar of gold and the silver pieces. I wanted them so much that I took them. You will find them buried inside my tent." When these things are found and brought to Joshua, he says to Achan, "Why have you brought trouble on us? Now Jehovah will bring trouble on you." At that, all the people stone Achan and his family to death. Doesn't that show that we should never take things that do not belong to us? Don't cry, Jimmy. Achan was a bad man. He deserved to die.
I know he was, but I'm a bad boy. Jehovah will punish me, too.
No, he won't, Jimmy. God doesn't punish good little boys.
But I'm not a good little boy.
Why do you keep saying that, Jimmy? What happened?
I stole a banana.
Oh, well.
Excuse me a minute, Douglas. Maybe we ought to find out what's upsetting Jimmy so much about it.
Sure. Good idea.
Tell us about it, Jimmy. Just what happened?
The lady at the fruit stand. She wasn't looking, so I took a banana and ran off with it. But Jehovah saw me, and he'll punish me. Will you help me pray to Jehovah so he'll forgive me?
Of course I will. And you'll pray too. When you say your prayers tonight, we'll remember that.
When did you take the banana, Jimmy?
Last week.
But why is it that you just thought about it now?
Because Jehovah punished Achan for being a thief.
You mean just hearing that story made you realize you'd done something wrong?
I guess I knew it was wrong, even if the woman didn't see me. But Jehovah saw it, and he didn't let Achan get away with it. So I have to ask him if he'll forgive me.
I guess that's a pretty good book, isn't it?
It sure is. Mommy reads it to me every night.
He won't go to bed without at least one story.
I suppose, as your father, I ought to take a little more interest in your upbringing. Would you like me to read a story to you sometime?
Sure, that would be great.
I think so too, Douglas. Now, Jimmy, why don't you run upstairs and get ready for bed? And I'll be up in a minute to listen to your prayer. And we'll ask Jehovah to forgive you.
Okay, Mom. Remember now. Good night, Daddy.
Good night, son. I didn't realize Jimmy was so serious about
his relationship with God?
Yes. Jimmy's growing up. He's going to have even more serious problems to deal with someday. And I just realized, I wonder if I'm able to give him the kind of direction that he's entitled to, and that I feel responsible for. I'm going to have a talk with Jeff at the plant tomorrow and see what he suggests.
That's a good idea. I'm sure he'll have some good advice.
Well, you better run on up now and listen to Jimmy's prayer.
What's going on here? Who are you? Stop! Stop, I say!
About all we have to report this morning, Mr. Horton. The intruders got away clean last night. They must have known the inside of the plant like the back of their hands. They knew how to get in, too, even though you had all the locks changed. It's good you rerouted your watchmen. That's what caught them off guard, and I'm sure saved your plant. But we have all the names of those you discharged, and we're continuing our investigation. If anything develops, I'll be in touch with you.
Thanks very much, Captain. I appreciate all you're doing. Jeff, we could have lost the entire plan if those men hadn't been interrupted.
That would have been a catastrophe.
Of course, we're fully covered by insurance. But do you know how long it would take to rebuild this place and restock it with equipment and supplies?
I know.
In the meantime, what about all the employees? What would happen to them? They have families, too. We hear in the news about disgruntled employees and terrorism and bombings and arsonists, but you never think of it happening in your own plant. It makes you feel a little helpless, like we don't control our own future as much as we thought we did. I took precautions, everything I could think of. I even doubled our security force, although I didn't really expect anything would happen. But I didn't want to take any chances.
If the watchman had been just a couple of minutes late on his rounds, it could have been disastrous.
That close. You know, Jeff, I spent my whole life building up this business. I started with nothing, and everything worked in my favor. It's been very successful.
Yes, it has.
But I'm not kidding myself. If I had to rebuild and start over, in the time it would take with the competitive market we face today, I might never have caught up. That's what makes me uneasy. How do we protect ourselves? What more can I do to ensure security for my family?
You've done some very serious thinking, Mr. Horton.
Forget the mister. Call me Douglas.
All right, Douglas. There are a surprising number of people who are beginning to feel the same way you do. Many of them have actually lost their life's work or their life savings. Others have come to realize it just by observing the trends.
What do you suggest? What can I do in addition to what I've done?
Frankly, I don't have, and I'm sure no one else has, the answer to those questions. There are too many factors involved over which we have absolutely no control for anyone to ensure the kind of security you're looking for. There may have been a time some years ago when a man could reasonably make a secure future for himself, barring unforeseen circumstances, but not anymore. The times we live in today are beyond human control.
That sounds very pessimistic, Jeff, but I'm afraid I have nothing more to offer. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not ready to quit, and I'm not afraid of the future. We would have survived somehow. It just opens up a new dimension to me, that's all. Something I never expected.
It's a dimension we're all going to have to face sometime. And how we face it and what we do about it could very well change our way of life.
I think I know what you mean, Jeff. And I... Yes, Miss Jones?
There's a call on line one for you, Mr. Horton. It's very strange. A man's voice. He says it's a matter of life and death. I tried to cut him off, but he became quite insistent.
All right. Put him on the intercom.
Is that you, Horton?
Speaking.
You think you're going to see your kid again? You're never going to see him again. Get it? Never.
I can't believe it. What do you make of it, Jeff?
I'd say call the police immediately. Remember the arsonists.
You're right.
Yes?
Get me Captain Jenkins at the police precinct and put him on through the intercom. I don't like the sound of this at all, Jeff. I never saw such a vindictive spirit.
No, but it's a spirit that's being manifest more and more all the time.
Captain Jenkins.
Hello, Captain Jenkins. This is Horton.
Hello, Mr. Horton.
I just had a threatening phone call about my son.
What was the message?
A man's voice said I'd never see my son again. He repeated it. What do you make of it?
It could be a crank call, but we can't chance it. Try to find out as quickly as you can where the boy is now, and call me right back.
Right away. Miss Jones, get my home on the line right away.
Yes, Mr. Horton. Hello? Douglas? Miss Jones said you wanted to talk to me.
Yes, I do. First, though, could I talk to Jimmy for a minute?
Ernestine just took him for a little walk around the block. Is everything all right? There's nothing wrong, is there?
Nothing for you to worry about, dear. How long have they been gone?
Not more than a half hour. They should be home any minute.
When they get back, could you call me? I'd like to tell him something.
Right away, dear. You're not going to give me a hint?
No, just call me. Bye.
Bye.
Miss Jones, get me Captain Jenkins on the phone again.
Yes, Mr. Horton.
Well, Jeff, you heard. I'm worried.
It doesn't look good. He's thoroughly exposed, if it isn't too late already.
Captain Jenkins.
Hello, Captain. Horton here. The boy was taken for a little walk around the block about a half hour ago.
His mother?
No, a maid.
How well do you know her?
Quite well. She comes in regularly to help around the house. She's very fond of Jimmy. I have no reason whatsoever to mistrust her.
I'm dispatching a patrol car out to the neighborhood right away, quietly. Would you happen to have a picture of the boy in your office?
Yes, a recent one. My secretary could give it to you.
Good. The boys will be by to pick it up on the way. We'll do the best we can, Mr. Horton. Just a suggestion. Maybe you and your wife both better lay low for a while and keep your eyes open. Where do you park your car at the plant?
It's locked up inside.
Could you call someone there and inquire if a stranger may have come in for some reason? I'll hold the phone.
Sure. Better still, I'll get him on the phone and tie him in on a conference line. Miss Jones, get Dickinson in the garage on the phone and tie him in on a line with Captain Jenkins. I don't know, Jeff. This is getting worse all the time.
You're up against some vicious characters, Douglas.
Hello, Mr. Horton. You wanted to talk to me?
Yes. Did anyone from my car dealer or anyone else come in to look at the car today?
Yes. As a matter of fact, he left about a half hour ago. He said he was from your dealer and you wanted him to check out something covered by your warranty. It only took him about 15 or 20 minutes.
Did you see what he was doing?
No, it was something under the hood. I didn't bother him. Is it all right?
Yes. It's a bit unusual for Tom Mooney to send a man out, but one thing, though. Don't let anyone go near the car. And whatever you do, don't let anyone start it up. I know Tom wouldn't give me a bad deal, but I'm having a police inspector stop by to check up on the job. He'll identify himself officially. Thanks, Dickinson. Is the inside line clear, Miss Jones?
Yes, it is, Mr. Horton.
Well, Captain, does that confirm your suspicions?
It sure does. It looks like you were a sure target for a bombing.
You saved my life, Captain. How can I thank you?
Let's just be glad we caught it in time. I don't think there's much question about what the inspector will find. This opens up a couple of possibilities. You may be the sole target, not your son.
Oh, how I hope so.
If a bomb was planted in your car, we have a good chance of catching the man who did it. I'll get after our information sources right away. Oh, by the way, I was just handed a note. The squad car I sent out to your neighborhood just radioed in, and the boy said they spotted your son with a maid just walking up to the house.
Oh, thank God.
I thought you'd like to know. Goodbye, Mr. Horton.
Goodbye, Captain, and thanks.
What a blessing, Douglas. How thankful we can be that Jimmy's safe.
I hope Veronica never needs to know. I've learned many things in the last hour or so. I've heard on the news and read in the papers about children being kidnapped, disappearing, by the thousands, and never being heard of again. And I've thought, what an awful shame. I thought I was a sympathetic and understanding man. And I know many others feel just as I did. I wonder how many of them will have to go through my experience before they can realize the bitter heartache and despair of those children and their loving parents. Why can't we feel the suffering of others just because it isn't our own? I know if this world's hatred and violence and acts of terrorism don't stop, the world will be eaten up by it.
It won't have that chance. It won't be allowed to get that far. One of the outstanding prophecies of the Bible says that God will destroy those destroying the earth. Those who are sighing and groaning because of these bad conditions will have a chance to be spared.
I don't think I've ever prayed before in my life, Jeff. But I did today, several times, and I used the name of your God, Jehovah. Do you think he heard me?
Well, your prayer was an unselfish one. You were thinking of Jimmy and Veronica.
Yes, I was. Now it makes me think of the position of the thousands of others, hundreds of thousands, who have become victims of these violent times. So many, in so many ways. It never came through to me so clearly as it did today. I know you've thought about it, Jeff, and I'm sure you have some answers.
The Bible does. Jehovah God has put them there for us, and he expects us to look for them and to turn to him for proper direction. He won't disappoint us.
I would like very much to believe that, but I've always had to learn the hard way. I'm willing to try, but there are a lot of questions still in my mind. The solution you've talked about seems so unreal, and yet, for the life of me, at the moment I can't think of another that would do the job so completely and fairly. Would you be willing to take some time to go into some of the details for me? Maybe that way it'll make a little more sense to me.
I'd be very glad to, Douglas. In fact, Connie and I would be happy to stop by and talk to both you and Veronica. You can ask all the questions you like, and we'll try to find the answers one at a time.
Your son Jimmy is on line one, Mr. Horton.
That boy. He called me. Hi, Jimmy. How are you?
I'm fine, Daddy. You wanted to tell me something?
Why, yes. How would it be if I came home a little early tonight?
That would be great. Are you going to bring me something?
Okay. What would you think if I brought something for your mother, too?
Sure. She'd like that.
All right, son. I'll see you in a little while. Bye.
Bye, Daddy.
I hope I never forget how I felt when I thought I would never hear that voice again.
Well, Douglas, you should have many happy days ahead of you, for all of you, as a family.
I'll talk to Veronica, and we'll try to set up a date.
The sooner the better. Time is running out.
Time is indeed running out. How much worse do conditions have to get before others like Douglas Horton begin to realize it? Jehovah is speeding up the time now, opening wide a door of opportunity to those sighing and groaning to receive that vital mark on the forehead for survival. This is not a time for complacency. Neither should we be lulled into a false sense of security, thinking that simply because we may be out of harmony with violent world conditions, Jehovah will preserve us at Armageddon. Just as surely as the unintentional manslayer in ancient Israel had to get into the city of refuge to escape the avenger, so today we must actively avail ourselves of Jehovah's provision for us, exercise faith in the merit of Christ's atoning sacrifice, dedicate our lives to Jehovah, and get baptized. Then we must engage in the work of God's city-like organization in preaching this good news of the kingdom so that others too may be marked on the forehead for survival. Now, what happened to Ben-Haman fleeing for his life to escape the avenger of blood?
Refuge! Refuge!
He killed my brother! He deserves to die!
Hold there! He's within the city now! You can't pursue him in here!
Guard! Let go of me! Let me in!
Gomar, listen. It was an accident. I had no animosity for him.
My brother is dead. You killed him, Ben-Haman.
Peace, my son.
Peace? For a manslayer? Oh, priest, he deserves to die. I am the avenger.
This is a city of refuge, my son. If this man is a willful murderer, then, as you say, he must die.
Ha!
But first he must stand trial. If he is innocent of willful manslaying, then he must be given sanctuary here. You must respect the law of the city of refuge. It is the law of Jehovah. Go now in peace. Ben-Haman, you will be safe here. If you are able to prove your lack of malice, you may remain in the city until the death of the high priest. But if you venture out of the city and are overtaken by the avenger, your blood will be upon your own head.
It is a just and merciful arrangement of Jehovah, and I can thank Jehovah that I was urged not to waste time, but to run for refuge.
Jehovah is a merciful God, but even in his loving kindness, justice must be satisfied. How many are there still, like Douglas Horton, honest, perhaps upright, who are yet hanging on to this world as though it can somehow provide a satisfactory way of life and a measure of security? Not all of them will necessarily have to undergo the traumatic experience he did. Yet before this system ends, many, perhaps thousands more children will be abducted. And again, perhaps thousands of ordinary people may lose their lives through some form of violence or act of terrorism. How many, unlike Horton, will fail to open their eyes to the full significance of these times and, while they may feel a measure of pity and concern for those unfortunates directly affected by the conditions, failed to sigh and groan over the detestable things being done in Christendom and indeed throughout the earth. A great responsibility rests on the entire community of mankind today because, just as Jehovah expressed it to Ezekiel in Jerusalem of old, their error is very, very great, and the land is filled with bloodshed, and the city is full of crookedness. For they have said, Jehovah has left the land, and Jehovah is not seeing. And as for me also, my eye will not feel sorry, neither shall I show compassion. Their way I shall certainly bring upon their own head. By the time that those agents of Jehovah who are charged with the destruction of false religion strike, how many more who are now hesitating will have found the place of refuge and will be definitely marked on the forehead for survival? Will you be among them? The time is reduced. Do not hesitate. Run!